There is a fifth dimension, beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition. It lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination. It is an area which we call the Twilight Zone.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Dimensions, a Twilight Zone podcast. On tonight's episode, we will be discussing Season 2, Episode 14, titled The Whole Truth. This episode was written by Rod Serling, directed by James Sheldon, produced by Buck Houghton. The music was by Marius Constant and Wilbur Hatch. In the cast were Jack Carson, Loring Smith, George Chandler, and R.D. Johnson. Its original air date was January 20th of 1961, and you can watch this episode on Tubi TV, Free VTV, Paramount Plus, or if you have the Blu-rays or DVDs. And again, Valentine's Day is coming up. Buy your loved one the DVD set for Valentine's Day. It's not as romantic as flowers or candy, but you get a few more miles out of it than you would flowers or candy. As always, fair warning ahead, there are spoilers in this episode of the podcast. So if you've not seen this episode of The Twilight Zone since it was originally aired in 1961, or if you haven't seen it in so long you don't really remember what happens and you don't want it to be spoiled by me in this podcast, go ahead and hit pause now, go watch the episode, come back, and listen to the rest. And as always, if you want to tell me any insights you have on this episode or other episodes or future episodes or previous episodes or any episodes, feel free to email me at dimensionstzpodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear your feedback. With that, this is a weird episode this week, folks. Not gonna lie. It's one of those episodes that kind of teeters on the brink of trying to be funny and also trying to be serious and poignant. And I feel like, much like when you go to a restaurant that has, you know, Italian food and burgers and, you know, Mexican food and other things on the menu, there's too much to do one thing completely right. And so you wind up with something that could be good or could be better, and it turns out to just be something. And I don't know how else better to explain that other than this episode is really something. I don't hate it. I don't love it. It just is. And so am I. And so are we all. And this thing exists in the same way we exist. People know about it. And people either like it or hate it. Or they're indifferent to it. And in the realm of the Twilight Zone, this is one of those episodes that I think people either forget about or they don't like it enough to ever watch it again after watching it a time or two. Now, of course, you know, there's always going to be the outliers, the people that, oh, this is my favorite episode of The Twilight Zone. I love this episode. I think Jack Carson is great. And I think, you know, the whole premise is wonderful and so on and so forth. And that may be true and it may be your thing. And if it is, I judge ye not. For everyone has their own preferences. Certainly I do. And my preferences with this episode is that it's, I think, another attempt from Serling to be humorous, but not in a full-on slapstick humor sort of way that, like, Mr. Beavis or in the later seasons, Cavender is coming with the wonderful, ever as awesome as a person could be, Carol Burnett. Even she couldn't save it. We'll get there. So don't worry about that, ladies and gentlemen. We will get there. But this one's somewhat, to me, at least, falls pretty much flat on its face. And that's not, and that's me saying that, that's not me saying I hate it. I don't hate it. I actually, in a weird sort of way, kind of like this episode. But it's not one of my favorites. It's certainly not in the top 10, certainly not in the top 5, not the top 20, not the top 30, not even the top 50. It may be in the top 100. So, you know, we're looking at somewhere lower mid-tier of Twilight Zone. And again, some of you might think, well, that's too high, Bill. It needs to be somewhere around 150. And that may well be for some people. And it may be up near 15 for some people as the best episode ever. But not me. So we're looking at lower to mid-tier in my humble opinion. I can tell you that it has a 6.4 rating on IMDb. Not that that necessarily means anything, but in the realm of Twilight Zone episodes, that's fairly low. Which, again, much like The Eye of the Beholder, beauty as well as preference as well as taste is certainly all in the same. It's why we're all different people and why we all like different things, you know. That's just life, you know. What are you going to do? So, saying all that, I think we should go ahead and crack in. So let's get started with the opening narration. This, as the banner has already proclaimed, is Mr. Harvey Honeycutt, an expert on commerce and con jobs, a brash, bright, and larceny-loaded wheeler and dealer who, when the good Lord passed out a conscience, must have gone for a beer and missed out. And these are a couple of other characters in our story. A little old man in a Model A car. But not just any old man, and not just any Model A. There's something very special about the both of them. As a matter of fact, in just a few moments, they'll give Harvey Honeycutt something he's never experienced before. Through the good offices of a little magic, they will unload on Mr. Honeycutt the absolute necessity to tell the truth. Exactly where they come from is conjecture, but as to where they're heading for, this we know, because all of them, and you, are on the threshold of the Twilight Zone. So the story opens with Mr. Harvey Honeycutt, who is a used car salesman in the in every sense of the word, from the good, the bad, the ugly, the cheap, the greasy, the slimy, the backhanded, the underhanded, the overhanded, every-handed way a person could be classified as quote-unquote a used car salesman. This man is it. Played, I think, excellently by Mr. Jack Carson. Certainly he has the aptitude, attitude, and and fortitude for this kind of role, and he does quite well in it, in my opinion. And he is in the middle of, shall we say, schmoozing and trying to hard sell a young couple on a car when a little old man in a Model A Ford comes driving up. The little old man wants to sell the car. Mr. Honeycutt, of course, being by his lonesome because junior salesman has gone to lunch or gone to the printers to get more signs. Mr. Honeycutt is minding the store, and so he's trying to juggle between the both of them, and he's doing it quite well, with the exception of still being a sleazy, shifty, underhanded used car salesman. He offers the old man a pittance for the Model A, telling the old man the exact opposite of what he was telling the younger couple. He was telling the younger couple that the new cars are built cheaply and that no one wants them and they fall apart as soon as you get them off the lot. That's why you want to buy something older. And he tells the old man that they didn't even know how to build cars until 10 years ago, and the Model A was, you know, one of the worst cars ever built, etc., etc., so that he can kind of, you know, talk him down on the price a little bit, which he does. He gets the old man for not a lot of money. He buys it for $25, if I remember correctly. And a quick inflation calculation will tell you that $25 in 1961 is give or take the equivalent of $249 today. So he basically gave the man what a scrap metal dealer would give you to bring in a car. You know, if you call one of those cash for cars, you know, things that you see on the side of the road or you know, the little flyers for the little yard signs that they have in intersections and cities. I think you get like $350 now. But the point is, it's basically scrap price for the car. And the little old man, after signing the paperwork and getting his money, decides to tell Mr. Honeycutt that this car comes with a string attached. And that string would be that whoever owns the car has to tell the truth. That the car is magical, and whoever owns the car has to tell the truth. Now, unluckily for Mr. Honeycutt, his assistant was at the print shop or gone to lunch, because he could have done the paperwork, and then the junior salesman would have had to tell the truth. But unfortunately, Mr. Honeycutt was the one that signed the paperwork and bought the car, and therefore Mr. Honeycutt now has to tell the truth, which we see in the next scene where he goes back to talk to the young couple after getting rid of the old man. And he, you know, basically goes back on everything he told them, and told them to go somewhere else that's more reputable and won't sell them a lemon. Because Mr. Honeycutt says he has nothing on the lot that will even run. And we see this, you know, through a few more things. He deals with Irv, his junior salesman. Irv wants a raise, and because he'd been there 6 months, and Honeycutt promised him a raise if he sold like 5 cars, and he sold 5 cars, and now he wants a raise. And Honeycutt says, I always tell everyone I hire that, and I never give them a raise, and they stick around long enough to realize that I'm never going to give them a raise until they quit, and then I just hire somebody else. And likewise, we see Honeycutt have to tell the truth when he talks to his wife on the phone. He's trying to tell her that he has to do inventory, but then he, in mid-sentence, changes, of course, having to tell the truth. He's going to tell her that he's playing poker with the boys all night, and he did the same thing the month before and the month before that. And of course, she gets angry, yells at him, and hangs up. His junior salesman, Irv, punches him in the face and quits. And then we meet Honest Luther Grimley, who is a politician in the city, in the district that Honeycutt's lot sits in. And Grimley sees the Model A and is thinking about purchasing it for basically a political political PR move to show people that, you know, to show people in his district that he is not a crook, that he is a man of the people and drives a people's car, like the Model A. And he asks Honeycutt, you know, what are the strings, you know, what strings are attached if I buy this thing for, I think they agreed on, I think, $22.50 or something, you know, very low. And Honeycutt then, of course, has to tell honest Luther Grimley what the strings attached are. And of course, when he tells him, of course, Luther Grimley is like, well, I can't have that. I'm a politician. If I were to have to tell the truth, let me tell you, I would be out of a job so fast it'd make your head spin. And with it being re-election time, he certainly doesn't want to own this car. And so they get the idea that they can work together and they know who to sell it to. And just so happens, after looking at the paper, they realize that if they could get Nikita Khrushchev to buy the car, it would change, of course, the geopolitical world stage. Because, you know, being Russian, Russia was our enemy at the time. This was in the Cold War. You know, Kennedy was, you know, coming in or already in. And here we were in the height of the Cold War. The Russians are our enemies. And so they get the idea to sell the car to Nikita Khrushchev, who happens to be in town. And so at the end of the episode, they wind up having to, selling the car to Nikita Khrushchev. Of course, his aide is there, and his aide is the one that wants to sign the papers, but Harvey Honeycutt persuades them in his best used car salesman persuasion techniques to have the boss, quote unquote, the boss, sign the paperwork so that, of course, the curse or magic, whatever, what have you, will pass on to Nikita Khrushchev. And that ends the episode. And with that, let's get to the closing narration. Couldn't happen, you say? Far-fetched? Way out? Tilt of center? Possible. But the next time you buy an automobile, if it happens to look as if it's just gone through the Battle of the Marne, and the seller is ready to throw in to the bargain one of his arms, be particularly careful in explaining to the boss about your grandmother's funeral when you're actually at the Chavez Ravine watching the Dodgers. It'll be a fact that you are the proud possessor of an instrument of truth, manufactured and distributed by an exclusive dealer in the Twilight Zone. So, Harvey Honeycutt sells the car to Nikita Khrushchev, of course, the premier of Soviet Russia, who, again, like I said, height of the Cold War, he is our enemy at this time. They are our enemy at this time. And, you know, this was back during the time that, nowadays the young people in school have active shooter drills. Well, back when Nikita Khrushchev and John F. Kennedy were running around, it was, oh, we're under the threat of nuclear attack, so if a bomb is going to go off, hide under your desk. Because, you know, a little bit of wood and a little bit of metal will save you from nuclear fallout. I guess I say that to say not a whole lot has changed in the years, perhaps. We still have to do things like that, I suppose. However, let's get back on topic. And what is the topic? The topic is this episode of The Twilight Zone, which, again, like I said, I didn't hate, I didn't love. It was the third episode of the of six episodes to be videotaped instead of filmed on film, which was the cost-saving device used by the studio to save money. And as we discussed in previous episodes, this didn't actually save any money. Go back to Lateness of the Hour if you want to listen to it. I explain it a little better in that episode. They literally didn't save enough money to even worry about doing this, so they only did six episodes. Realized the cost savings was not there, and they canned the idea. Now, I'll get a little more into this in the likes and dislikes, but I will say I don't hate this episode. I really don't. I know a lot of people do. I personally don't hate it, but I'm not necessarily in love with it either. But with that, why don't we crack into the bios? So the first bio was will be for director James Sheldon. Now, Sheldon was born in 1920 in New York and died in 2016 at the age of 95 in New York as well. Born and died in New York. Now, with that being said, there's not a whole lot on him other than that he was a director and producer. And we'll give you some of what he directed and or produced. His career starts all the way back in 1952 with directing 10 episodes of the 116 episodes of the television show Mr. Peepers. He went on then to direct several episodes of different television shows like Studio One, The Armstrong Circle Theater, Robert Montgomery Presents, Celebrity Playhouse, Schlitz Playhouse, Ford Television Theater, Studio 57, Richard Diamond Private Detective, Zane Grey Theater, Stop Me If You've Heard These, The Donna Reed Show, Perry Mason, The Jim Backus Show, who, if you remember, Jim Backus played, of course, Thurston Howell on Gilligan's Island. That is correct. He also directed six episodes of The Twilight Zone, starting with this episode. He also directed A Penny for Your Thoughts, Long Distance Call, It's a Good Life, Still Valley, and I Sing the Body Electric. So he directed It's a Good Life, which is considered one of the best Twilight Zone episodes, certainly in the top 10 and even top 5 of a lot of people's favorites. He also directed A Penny for Your Thoughts, which is a wonderful episode. He directed I Sing the Body Electric, which was the only Twilight Zone episode that was written by Ray Bradbury. And he directed one of my personal favorites, Still Valley, which we'll get to next season. Again, that's another one of those people either love it or hate it. Personally, I think it's a fan favorite of mine. Let me go ahead and say that. So he directed six episodes of that. He directed a couple episodes of the Alfred Hitchcock Hour, Wagon Train, The Greatest Show on Earth, The Gunsmoke, My Mother the Car, etc., etc. He worked all the way up until 1986, when he directed an episode of Sledgehammer, and that was his last directing job. We're going to assume he retired after that, because, like I said, not a whole lot is known about this man, other than what he directed. So let's move on to Mr. Honeycutt himself, Jack Carson. Jack Carson was born in 1910, because when you're born in that age, you have to say 19 and, you know, because it's that long ago. And he passed away in 1963. So he passed away 2 years after this episode was aired. Of course, it was filmed later in 1960 to be aired in early of 1961, but he passed away at the age of 52, sadly. Now, he arrived in Hollywood in 1937 and found work at RKO as an extra. His first major acting role came alongside Humphrey Bogart in the romantic comedy Stand-In in 1937. After a few years at RKO, his career was not going kind of in the path that he wanted it to, and so he decided to sign a deal with Warner Brothers in 1941, where he got to star alongside James Cagney in such films as The Strawberry Blonde and The Bird Came COD. After 3 years, he starred with Jane Wyman in Make Your Own Bed in 1944 and again in The Dough Girls in 1944. He was a decent dramatic actor, as was shown in some of his movies, like the 1943 movie The Hard Way and his critically acclaimed performance in Mildred Pierce in 1945. But comedies is where he really seemed to, I don't want to say excel, but where he seemed better suited. With the shift in his career more toward comedy, he became a comedic actor on radio in the 40s and 50s, which helped him transition into television work in the 50s. He hosted and performed on the Colgate Comedy Hour from 1952 to 55, and he would also help host the U.S. Royal Showcase in 1952. He would appear on several, you know, television episodes of shows in the 50s. He is actually somewhat well known for this episode of The Twilight Zone being one of his better performances. In between all the television, he still had time for some movies. Although his movie career had slowed down when he started doing television, he still appeared in a couple of more prestigious or well-known films, such as A Star is Born in 1954 with Judy Garland, The Tarnished Angels in 1957 with Rock Hudson, and Cat on a Hot Tin Roof in 1958 with America's Sweetheart, Mr. Paul Newman. Sadly, in 1962, while in rehearsal for the play Critics' Choice, he collapsed on stage. He was diagnosed with a stomach disorder, but 2 months later, it was discovered that he had cancer and, during an unrelated operation, and the cancer is, of course, what did him in. So, sadly, he passed away, as I said, 2 years after this episode aired, sadly. So let's move on to Honest Luther Grimley in this episode, who was played by Mr. Loring Smith, who was born in November of 1890 in Connecticut and passed away in July of 1981 at the age of 90. Now, again, he's one of these people that, given the age and given when he died, not a whole lot is known about him other than his body of work, which is short in stature. He had 31 credits to his IMDb, starting in 1941 with Keep 'Em Flying and Shadow of the Thin Man. And he transitioned from, of course, movies to television, as people did in the 50s. Appearing in episodes of the Pulitzer Prize Playhouse, Philco Television Playhouse, the Armstrong Circle Theater, Mr. Peepers, Broadway Television Theater, the DuPont Show of the Month, and then, of course, he would switch back and forth, also being in movies such as 1960s The Right Man, 1959's Miracle on 34th Street, and, of course, back and forth from television to movies. In fact, he was in two episodes of The Twilight Zone. He was, of course, in this episode of Twilight Zone, The Whole Truth, and he was also in Season 4's I Dream of Jeannie, starring, of course, everyone's favorite irascible character, Mr. Howard Morris, who, if you remember, played Ernest T. Bass on the Andy Griffith Show. After The Twilight Zone, he was only in a number of projects after that, including The Cardinal in 1963, Profiles in Courage in 1965, Hurry Sundown in 1967, and his last role as Guthman in Certain Honorable Men in 1968. After that, he retired, where after that he passed away in 1981. And last but not least, we will talk about Mr. Artie Johnson, who played Irv, the junior salesman. He was born in January of 1929 and passed away just a few years ago in 2019 at the age of 90. And he had a decent career. He had over 300 credits on his IMDb, which included everything from voiceover work to actual acting in movies and television and all that stuff. His first role was in 1954 in an episode of Max Liebman Spectaculars. He was also in an episode of the Danny Thomas Show, which, speaking of Andy Griffith, was where the Andy Griffith Show got its start. Mostly playing bit parts on television series throughout the 50s, such as December Birdie, Sally, Schlitz Playhouse, Red Skelton Hour, The Subterraneans. This, of course, is his only episode of The Twilight Zone. He was also in Shirley Temple's Storybook, The Dinosaur Chevy Show, Alfred Hitchcock Presents, Dr. Kildare. He was a hotel clerk in an episode of The Andy Griffith Show, speaking of Andy Griffith. I mean, it just keeps going. No Time for Sergeants, the Jack Benny Program, Bob Hope Presents the Chrysler Theater, Bewitched, the Dick Van Dyke Show, the Donna Reed Show, the Phyllis Diller Show, etc., 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 etc. Let's just say the man worked a lot. He was not a lazy man. Let's go ahead and say that. And it wasn't until later in his career that he switched into voice acting, providing voices on such animated shows as The Animaniacs, The Sylvester and Tweety Mysteries, Justice League Unlimited, and several others. So the man had quite a career in television and, of course, in voiceover work. And he was in one episode of The Twilight Zone. So with that, let's move to trivia. John F. Kennedy, who was referenced in this story, was inaugurated as the 35th President of the United States on January 20th, 1961, the day this episode aired. As again, this was the third of six episodes to be videotaped. Lee Sabinson, who plays Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev, was blacklisted during the Hollywood Red Scare era in the McCarthyism. We talked about that in previous episodes. If you're interested in that, it's quite interesting topic to get into and kind of do a little deep dive on. It's crazy stuff. And just so funny, he played Premier Nikita Khrushchev, a communist, who, oddly enough, was labeled a communist during the McCarthy era. So there's your little something. The title of the episode refers to the oath given a witness before a trial or deposition that he will tell, quote-unquote, the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And, of course, this similar plot device would be later used in what I'd like to call the companion piece of this episode. This plot device would somewhat, in a little different way, but in the same way be used many years later in the Jim Carrey movie Liar Liar, where in this episode he has to buy a Model A, and if I remember correctly, in Liar Liar, his kid just wishes that his dad would have to tell the truth, and through the power of magic, much like in the Model A car, the wish comes true, and Jim Carrey can't lie, even though he's a lawyer, and Harvey Honeycutt can't lie, even though he's a slimy used car salesman. That'll do it for trivia, and as far as goofs, there's really only one. Honeycutt puts a cigar on the handrail of the office when going to talk to the young couple in the opening narration. But after that, we never see it again, and he never picks it up again. So we assume it just, you know, disappeared through the magic of television. And with that, we'll go into the likes and dislikes of this episode. I will tell you, as I've said before, I like this episode. This, again, wasn't one of my favorites as far as, like, it's not in the top 10, top 20, top 50. But after watching this episode again, I do realize that I really do like it. I mean, it's nothing special, it's nothing fancy. You can tell it was filmed on a soundstage about the size of a large walk-in closet of any, you know, normal home in America these days. But I don't know, there's something about it that I kind of like, even though the story is silly and we don't know whether it wants to be serious or a comedy or what it wants to be, and it doesn't even know, it seems. As we all know, Rod Serling writing comedy wasn't necessarily one of his strong suits, even though if you watch him give speeches and lectures and that sort of thing, he had a sense of humor, but he just maybe wasn't the greatest at translating it onto the page, or maybe directors just weren't the best back then at getting the best out of a comedic performance, be it what you will. I am no way disparaging the man, but comedy was definitely not his strong suit. And that's about my only dislike of this episode, is that you don't really know where it's going to be. It's a comedy. It's not a comedy. It's a, you know, whatever. You don't know what it is. But the performances are good enough that you don't really care. And that's the best part about it. The performances are good enough that you don't really care. It doesn't really matter. And that's the great part about it. So, my dislike is that the story is kind of, it never really picks a lane. Like I said, much like going to a restaurant where they serve Italian food and fajitas and burgers and fries and, you know, everything in between, that just means they're not doing anything 100% great. It's all going to be the same. It's all going to be middle of the road. And that's kind of what this episode is. It's fajitas at an Italian restaurant. It's not going to be horrible, but you don't know you'd go there again to get the same dish. And maybe that's just me. If you disagree, email me, dimensionstzpodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. And with that being said, let's transition over into casting. So if this episode were to be remade today and someone said, Bill, we want to redo this episode and we want you to choose the cast for this episode, what would you do? And I'll tell you, here's what I would do. For the character of Harvey Honeycutt, I would choose actor Frank Whaley. Now, I've talked about him before. I've actually used him in my quote-unquote casting dreams on these episodes before. He is a fantastic actor, and he is certainly very underrated and very underused in the entity What Is Hollywood. You might remember him from such movies as Career Opportunities with Jennifer Connelly in 1991, Swimming with Sharks with Kevin Spacey in 1994, I want to say, and through several TV shows and other things in the meantime, including one of my favorite episodes of Psych, the TV show that was on the, I believe, USA Network back in the mid-2000s here. Also a great show if you ever are looking for something to look at. Very funny, very cute, very just a show that you can just shut your brain off to and just kind of enjoy, and it's a great show. So for Mr. Harvey Honeycutt, Frank Whaley. For Honest Luther Grimley, Tim Roth, because he's a great actor. He could definitely do the part. For Irv, the young salesman person guy, I would go personally with Mr. Dulay Hill from Psych. I think it would be funny, and he would certainly be, he has that sort of comedic touch that would be perfect for that, even though he is definitely worth more of a role than just a side character in a remade 70-year-old television episode. And for the old man who sells the car to Harvey Honeycutt, big actor in a small role, I would go with Mr. Harrison Ford to play the old man. And I'd have him play real angry for the fact that he's, you know, with a little bit of air of sarcasticity, because he would be getting rid of the car and he would be happy to get it off of his chest. And I think it would be a great episode. And if you agree with me, let me know. And if you disagree with me, let me know. DimensionsTZPodcast@gmail.com. Love to hear from you. Like, comment, subscribe, all that stuff. Tell your friends, tell a buddy, bring a friend. Don't dare miss it. Also, leave me reviews on any apps that you might listen to this podcast on. It helps more people find things. And I want more than 18 listeners if I ever have the opportunity. Thank you very much. And so lastly, but not leastly, let's move on to the moral or philosophy of this story. I think we kind of all know what that is, don't we? That you should always tell the truth, you know. I hate to trot it out, but like Judge Judy always says, if you tell the truth, you don't have to have a good memory, you know. So you don't have to remember what you're always lying about, is basically what she was saying. If you tell the truth, you don't have to have a good memory. But yeah, so tell the truth. Because, and I'll tell you this, I had a boss years and years ago who once told me, he says, I've never fired anyone for telling me the truth. And interesting words. And FYI, he didn't fire me. We were talking about something completely unrelated, and my job was not in jeopardy. But still, interesting words to hear. I've never fired a person for telling me the truth. So, moral of the story, tell the truth. No one should have to be compelled to tell the truth by magic or otherwise. You should just be able to tell the truth. And lying is just, it's just horrible. It's just horrible. And we're better people than that, aren't we? At least I'd like to hope we are. So with that being said, I think we can safely bring this episode in for a landing. Again, if you like this program, tell everyone you know, get them listening. Like I said, I'd love more than 18 listeners. You know, I feel like I could quit doing the podcast and we could just all get together for a beer every Thursday night and just, you know, talk about the episode and have a good time. Because we certainly, you know, could all fit in the same room, obviously. So with that being said, tell people about it if they're interested. You know, let them know. Why not? You're not hurting anything. You're helping me. And I would appreciate it, certainly. And I want to thank you all who listen. I certainly do appreciate you. And if you would, stay tuned for next week's episode of The Twilight Zone, where a woman who is famous for appearing in a radio television program where she's the only person talking in the entire radio program now plays on an episode of The Twilight Zone where she says not a word for 24 minutes. So stay tuned for next week's episode, The Invaders, starring Agnes Moorehead. Thank you, everybody, and have a good night.